Good morning, Your Honors. Please excuse me. I'm a little bit hoarse this morning. May it please the court. Ray Ayers of Sanders Roberts on behalf of appellants Candace and Christopher Charles Williams, successor in interest to Thaddeus Williams, who is deceased, unfortunately.
Would you like to reserve a little time?
I would. I'd like to reserve 7 minutes.
7 minutes. You got it. Okay, thank you.
And I know there are a lot of facts here and a lot of issues. I think it boils down to a couple of big ones, but I'm happy to answer questions to make sure we focus on the questions that the court has rather than just repeating arguments.
You know, we're starting to sound like the Supreme Court, where the advocates now give about 2 minutes and then, you know, Justice Thomas goes off. So thank you.
In our view, Your Honor, this case boils down to whether judgment interest constitutes prejudice for purposes of latches. The court here found that it does. We submit that as a matter of law, it does not, because judgment interest is a feature, not a bug, as we mentioned. And as part of the panel knows, In re Hamilton held that very same thing, that it's not just to incentivize the debtor to pay, it's also to compensate the victim of the fraud. So here, there was never anything paid on the fraud judgment. And we think that the court's ruling would be a perversion of the equity that latches is supposed to provide, in that it would allow the debtor who didn't list the debt, who paid no money, to delay and claim financial hardship or the passage of time to avoid payment entirely. Meanwhile, the harmed party has passed away during the course of this proceeding. So in our view, Your Honors, the right outcome should have been a summary judgment in favor of the appellants, because latches as a matter of law cannot constitute.
So latches is, there's two issues here. One, latches is a very fact-intensive determination. So it's extremely rare, if impossible, to make that determination on a summary judgment motion, right?
We thought it certainly would be here as to the debtor who had the laboring oar on that issue as an affirmative defense. Here, we do think it would have been appropriate for appellants, because
you're saying there's no prejudice as a matter of law. There's no prejudice.
Correct.
So prejudice, even with the delay, because interest in accrual of interest is not prejudice.
Exactly. Right. I mean, as far as I know, all the 50 states and the federal government require interest. It's a public policy. It's in the California Constitution. The court noted in In re Hamilton, when it decided that the court could not reduce the interest because it thought that the interest was too high, the court here went even further and said, I'm going to use my equitable authority not just to reduce the interest rate or change the future interest. I'm going to eliminate the debt entirely. And we think that's wholly inappropriate use of the latches power.
All right. Let me back up a little bit even farther, because let's talk about latches. Now, we have the Beatty case, which says that latches can be applicable in a 523A3B case, which is what this is with respect to the claims of A2, 4, and 6, fraud, breach of fiduciary duty, and malicious injury. But the court made a sweeping determination that it also applies to your 523A19 claim.
That was a secondary issue. We think that the court missed the boat there. We think the Irigoyen case addresses that. That case, I believe, was in the context of the student loans, as was just discussed here. But it applies, as to my knowledge, to all of the exceptions to discharge other than 2, 4, and 6, and would apply equally here. And what Your Honor said earlier, we think, is exactly right. It puts the parties on equal standing. Either it is or it isn't discharged. Either party can come in and file a discharge claim. The consequences of being wrong are that there's potentially contempt if it's not a good faith argument that it's within one of the exceptions. And so we don't think there was a need for an adversary. The debtor could have filed an adversary. In fact, he's an attorney. He's a UVA law grad. He did file an adversary in the original bankruptcy against one of his prior spouses because she was pursuing a promissory note. So he knows how to do that. He was also given notice that the judgment was renewed. He was on constructive notice, at least because it was mailed to him when the renewals were made. He then raised the issue in 2020 when it was renewed again, but then apparently dropped the motion. It was during COVID, so we don't know what happened. There's no court ruling on the motion.
We know it was renewed, right?
It was renewed apparently either over the objection or a withdrawn objection. And so, and that's part of the reason why latches also shouldn't apply to the other claim, because there's no need to file because the judgment is enforceable on two grounds. So why would the debtor need to do anything? And it was really only the state court's reticence to move forward with the sale of this $1.7 million home, which was lien free up until 2020, that required an adversary at all. And so there's no delay. And also there's testimony undisputed from another brother who indicated that Thaddeus had regularly requested, you know, payment, and that Christopher, the debtor, was complaining about the fact that he was always asking about his money. And so
there's two things I'm hearing here, right? One is that latches just shouldn't apply, but it sounds more like what you're saying is that latches doesn't apply here because he was requesting the money always. And so again, that gets back to, that's really kind of a factual issue that should have really gone to a trial. But let's back up. You know, should latches apply in the self-effectuating context? No. Is really the point, the question.
Absolutely not, Your Honor. That's our position, is that under A8-19, the latches should not apply at all. And under 523A3B, latches can apply, but it's exceedingly rare, particularly where you already have a—
Said that, right?
Right.
Even Beatty said that.
Yeah. And here, it's not just a claim that you need to prove up and you have to have evidence. You already have a state court judgment that's valid and final. So that I think, narrows it up even further. And so then you have a question of, was there a prejudicial delay? We think there wasn't, which is what I was going to earlier, but we don't want to create a factual issue here. This case is already 3 years old. This has been going on forever. We think that the appellants are entitled to a resolution here, and remanding it for trial would not serve any purpose, particularly where the appellants are prejudiced because Thaddeus is no longer with us. And the issue is whether there has been a prejudicial delay. And so as to prejudice, there as a matter of law, there is no prejudice shown, because they were given plenty of opportunity to demonstrate, however they chose, that there was prejudice. There was multiple efforts at briefing, at discovery, a second attempt at discovery, and the sum total of the evidence was zero, other than interest has accrued.
Because they haven't paid.
Right.
Okay.
Which is a neat trick if you can pull it off, and that's why we think, quite frankly, that the trial court got it wrong. And so, you know, here—
But to back up again, Judge Brand, to keep your two arguments straight, let's leave aside 819. As to A3, you recognize under Beatty that latches can apply. What I'm hearing you saying is that under this situation, it doesn't apply because of the judgment.
I'm saying it doesn't apply in this situation as a matter of law, because there are no facts which could show prejudice, because the only argument that was made was, I don't have documents, my memory is lost. The court correctly dispensed with that in short order, because the cases that the court cited already dealt with that issue. And then the only other issue was interest, and interest as a matter of law is a function, not a bug. It's not prejudice. It's something that's supposed to compensate.
But to put it in a framework, then, under Beatty, we're looking at latches applying under A3, but we're going to the record on the summary judgment, and you're saying that none was shown.
Correct. As a matter of law, the court should have issued summary, adjudication or partial summary judgment on that issue on the record in front of it, because the only real issue that was made was, I can't pay because it's $600,000 of interest that has accrued.
But under your analysis, then, what you're saying is we should just order the court to enter judgment in your favor. But there was no discussion at the bankruptcy court about whether or not you actually satisfied 523, A2, A4, or A6. So how could we possibly do that?
Because the papers in front of the court did require that. The court even mentioned that we think it would be found on estoppel, and we
did. Well, it would have to be.
And we did go through at length in the opening brief to explain why that is the case. I don't even think that the debtor is attempting to argue that the debt doesn't otherwise come within the purview of 523A3B. He didn't even argue in opposition to the motion that the judgment doesn't have collateral estoppel effect. Here before this court, the only argument that he's making is it doesn't apply as to some or all of the judgment under A19. So that's not even an argument that the debtor has made. So the only question is whether latches would prevent entry of judgment in favor of the appellants, and we submit that it wouldn't for the reasons that we've stated.
So your excellent arguments have taken you well within the seven. Do you want to pause now?
I'd like to reserve.
Okay, thank you. All right.
Good morning, Richard Davis, on behalf of the appellee, Christopher Starr Williams. I think it's been framed very well. There's two issues. One, does latches apply to a 523A19 claim, and was it properly applied in this case?
But when you frame that, we're jumping on you early. When you're breaking out latches to A19, does that mean you agree that latches does not apply to the A3 claim?
Oh, no. I think it's clear that it applies to the A3 claim.
Why is that given the judgment?
Because of Beatty.
What is the latches too, right? Because I think there's a tension here between arguing latches as to the determination of the discharge. And then it seems like bleeding into that is some kind of quasi-argument latches as to collection. Collection is not our concern, right? It's only to the question of discharge.
Yes, it's to the question of discharge.
But going to the prior argument we had, right, if we find this is self-executing in this context, because it's A2, A4, maybe A6, but there's a judgment saying fraud, misrepresentation, and breach of fiduciary duty, why isn't that self-executing?
Because it's not clear that these are A19 claims.
No, not worrying about 19 at all. I'm going under A3.
Those are not self-executing.
Why aren't they self-executing if you have a judgment here? What is there to be determined under A3?
A complaint is required under A3 to be filed for those A2, A4, A6 claims. So I think a adversary proceeding was absolutely required. A complaint for non-dischargeability was required, but it could be brought at any time. It's not self-executing. The only claim—
You're saying that's under A3, not under Irigoyen and the dispute we had in the prior.
Yes. Okay. I think Irigoyen applies to the A19 claim. Where is that self-executing? And it is self-executing if it is clear. If it is not clear, it cannot be self-executing. And in this case, we know it wasn't clear because there was a state court that stopped the proceedings and said, I need a determination from the bankruptcy court. We go to bankruptcy court, and an adversary proceeding is filed. A complaint is filed. When a complaint is filed, latches is an available defense to that complaint. There's no case that says latches is restricted or limited and not should not apply to a debt that potentially falls into a category of a self-effecting exception. They had to go and get a determination. And the issue there—
Well, the only reason they went was because— It's kind of circular, right? The only reason they went was because the state court told them, I'm not going to do this unless you get me a comfort order from the bankruptcy court that says I can do this. But to Judge Baker's point, there's a judgment for fraud. 523A3 says it wasn't list scheduled. They didn't have notice in time to file a claim or non-dischargeability complaint. It's accepted from discharge. So,
and they waited 20 years. After,
but the debtor could have filed the motion. The debtor could have filed a case too.
As the court found, believed that the debt was discharged.
The creditor believed that it wasn't.
Why? By failing to... I'm sorry, Judge
Brown. Go ahead.
But by failing to list on the schedules, why doesn't A3 flip that burden onto you or your client?
Because
I apologize.
There's no case that flips that burden.
Judgment. It's right. Final. There's no question the judgment's final,
and if
right?
You want it, but not all judgments are accepted from discharge. So if they believed that this was accepted from discharge, they had an
obligation. Where is that in A3?
That an adversary proceeding
brought
is,
within X time.
It doesn't have to be brought in X time if there is not.
Where is it that has to be brought?
If there's not in A. In. A3, it says
it's not if it was not no notice and was not brought notice was not gained.
Then you can
bring
an adversary proceeding at any time. That's the exception.
Counsel, I'd let him finish the question.
Okay,
not
sorry,
I've taken enough of your time, but I don't see the word adversary. I don't see the requirement there.
So I don't think there's any case that says that latches doesn't apply to there's any restrictions to when. Latches can be applied or not applied. I think that if an adversary proceeding is filed, a defense, an available defense, is latches. And then it goes to was latches properly applied, right? And so you have to show unreasonable delay and prejudice, right? And so we strongly believe that latches is an available defense, and we believe that the court applied latches properly. There was an unreasonable delay because the appellee's father had noticed, Thaddeus Williams, had notice of the bankruptcy filing in December of 2002. Didn't bring an action. All he did during that time was renew the judgment. Did not take any enforcement actions. When he took actual enforcement actions, is what led to this coming over to the bankruptcy court. And so what the court then goes and finds is that there was a 20-year delay from the time that you noticed was unreasonable, and the accrual of interest is prejudicial in this case because the debtor believed that the debt was discharged. And so he doesn't pay any debt or has no incentive. In his mind, this is discharged. And we got $600,000 of interest that accrues. And then you can continue to renew that judgment.
Okay. And let's open up another can of worms here. All this is done on summary judgment. Is that problematic?
I think when you look at what is the undisputed facts.
Was there any weighing of evidence or credibility here?
I think the undisputed fact is that there is $620,000 worth of interest. That changed the position.
But is that something on which, so your argument is that's necessarily prejudicial?
I think that it is, especially okay. in this case, when somebody does not know you've got this sum of money that is accruing.
But wasn't part of that the declaration that, well, boy, that's a lot of money. I'm not sure you can pay it. Is that a summary judgment disposition?
I think you're looking at a change of position, and that's what the prejudice is. And $600,000 is a substantial amount.
If you don't have both, you don't win. So help me out with that, okay? I mean, if this is prejudicial, yes. What you're telling me is it's prejudicial not just because it's a big number. I mean, a lot of people could pay that in a nanosecond. The point is it was prejudicial because this individual couldn't pay it, right? And yes. Where did that come from?
I think that –
I think we've got some worries about the summary judgment aspect of this.
Okay, so please
address those for us.
So it does, in his declaration, say that this will create a financial strain on him. Whether that needs to be fully, we need to have a full trial or evidentiary hearing on that issue. Then that would be the issue that needs to go to trial. Was there prejudice that was caused?
Here we are.
But I think that we have an absolute change of position, a substantial change of position. $600,000 of interest that it is accrued from an individual that filed for bankruptcy. We know that he is an advanced age. The judge has observed him under examination, where both counsel had the ability to do that. He makes those observations. And he, I think he
could be a finding of fact, right?
So does
that's
it,
great if you have a trial.
So
right?
Is it reversible error if he saw that? Because he's going to see the same thing again. He's going to see this individual.
Doesn't he have to, in summary judgment, take all reasonable inferences in favor of the non-movement? Isn't that just part of the summary judgment process?
It is. And that's why I go back and say the amount, and as the court said, the amount of time plus the amount of interest that accrued is prejudicial. It is a changed circumstance from where he was in 2002 to where he is when this adversary proceeding gets filed in 2023. It is a significant.
But that sounds, again, to my point, that sounds like prejudice on collection, right? Not the dischargeability. And the state of California said that those creditors who renew can't continue to collect. It's not prejudicial under state law, clearly, right? Because the debt is still out there. There is no time limit saying you cannot renew after that period, which we're here in. So why is it prejudicial for discharge purposes?
I think it's prejudicial just under the standard.
Because it's a lot of money.
Of latches, right? So latches just says.
But if I had known, I would have paid it more. I paid it earlier.
Absolutely. If you know that you have a debt.
But your client didn't know he had a debt and he didn't do anything.
He had a debt. And that's what.
Because of latches.
No. Because he thought it got discharged in his bankruptcy.
But maybe it didn't. And he didn't give notice.
And doesn't he have the same right to file a lawsuit to get this determined? Because he knows his brother's out there, you know, wanting to collect and that money is accruing.
No, I don't know that the evidence shows that his brother wanted to collect.
He renewed it. Isn't that, again, on summary judgment, wouldn't it be a reasonable inference that if a creditor continues to renew a judgment – for summary judgment, at least, there was an intent or desire to continue to collect.
I think that the evidence also shows that he believed the judgment or the judgment was discharged when he filed an opposition to the renewal in 2020.
But I mean, the worry here, not to interrupt you, is that it kind of sounds like we're weighing a bunch of stuff, which doesn't sound like summary judgment to us.
I think it came down to the unreasonable delay coupled with the amount of interest.
Yeah, and any of those work for our purposes, what's okay? That? I mean, we're worried that what happened here is there was some weighing, there was some credibility determinations, which are off the table at summary judgment.
Well, I think latches is a abuse of discretion. And I think that the courts has.
Yeah, and had
summary judgment review is de novo.
Yes. Thank you.
But not,
that's where we are.
No, I think that whether it applies is de novo, but whether latches was the finding of latches was appropriate is an abuse of discretion. It's whether or not it should have been applied, whether it could be applied. That's what's de novo. But the application of it, that is discretion. That's an abuse of discretion.
Oh boy. We're talking about Rule 56. We're talking about everything in Rule 56 is de novo. I just am not seeing
I think
going
that
there.
It says the courts apply hybrid standard of review to grants of summary judgment on the basis of latches. Certain aspects of the district court's decision are reviewed de novo, including whether latches is available as a potential defense to a particular kind of action and whether the district court inappropriately resolved and disputed material facts in reaching its decision. But the application of the latches doctrine to the facts is reviewed for abuse of discretion. So I think
I would assume that there's no disputed facts,
right,
according to your standard.
And,
all right. Go ahead.
And the undisputed fact is that there is a 20-something year delay with $600,000 worth of interest that is accrued that is now this man that believes it's discharged is suddenly saddled with. And I think that is extremely prejudicial.
Well, suddenly is reading an awful lot into it, but go ahead.
What's that?
Suddenly is reading an awful lot into this situation, but you go ahead.
Well, if they're not, if you don't believe that you owe this money.
We're talking about belief here, okay? How is that possibly relevant for summary judgment? he believes one thing, the other side believes something else. You try the issue, you get witnesses on there, you believe one, you don't believe the other, you resolve it. How does that possibly fit within summary judgment?
I think that
I'm not trying to be funny. That's the challenge we have. We're trying to figure that out.
And I guess the difficult part that I find is that when I look at this and I'm sitting there seeing how is this amount of debt, which is a substantial amount of
money. No doubt.
All of a sudden, you're in your later years and it's now you're now liable for something that you did not think was that you were liable. So you made no plans, no retirement plans or you didn't in your planning for your retirement, you didn't plan for that. And all of a sudden, you've got to pay it. I think that is
prejudice. That's why either party can bring the action to the court's attention. Either party can file the action to determine dischargeability. The problem, as my colleagues are saying, is both parties have a belief that is inherently opposite.
And they could have brought that complaint.
You could have too. Yeah.
You're right. Any party could have, but there wasn't. And they're the ones that are trying to collect on this debt without really doing anything, like enforcement actions for this very long period of time. And then when a actual action is taken, there is a dispute of that. So, you know, had it been done before, he's sitting on his rights. There's no judgment debtor examination. There's none of this other stuff that would have said, hey, this guy is really coming after me to enforce a judgment. I need to file an adversary proceeding. This is a family dispute. There's all kinds of stuff that is going on there. And I think that it's for him to have had the burden of bringing an adversary proceeding doesn't negate, or the fact that he could have does not negate the fact that the appellant didn't bring one, and that we're 23 years later, and we have this huge sum of money that is due.
Okay, you're about an hour. I'm sorry, about a minute over. So unless you have one last brilliant remark, I think we'll move on. Move back to the
remarks.
Well, you have. I mean, you're both done a wonderful job. Okay,
thank you.
Thank you very much.
So I'll just briefly deal with the A19 issue. We think Irigoyen clearly lays out the standard there. I disagree respectfully with counsel's analysis. We think that this panel's uniquely qualified to be able to determine what Irigoyen stands for with respect to the need for dischargeability proceeding for A19. With respect to latches under A3B, we do agree that it is available in very limited circumstances. And I was thinking, as I was listening to counsel, it reminded me of a Seinfeld episode where George Costanza said, "It's not a lie if you believe it." And to me, it seems pretty crazy that the debtor's subjective belief that he doesn't owe the money means he doesn't owe the money. That just seems Kafkaesque to me. We don't think that.
Well, could you conclude that no jury could reasonably believe that?
Absolutely.
That's the point? Okay.
That's my point. And that's the other issue here is there shouldn't be going back to why is this judgment not enforced? This gentleman had a home in Del Mar, California worth almost $2 million. I have a declaration in the record that I submitted because I had it appraised. I got a litigation guarantee before we went to foreclose. The house was in an irrevocable trust in his daughter's name. His other brother was the trustee and put it back into his name in 2019. So the idea that Mr. Thaddeus Williams, who doesn't have the wherewithal, who lives in Virginia, is supposed to be hiring attorneys to do all these things for all these years, and because he didn't, the debtor shouldn't have to pay, strikes me as not equitable. And in fact, it took an attorney who was perhaps willing to take the case on a contingent fee basis in order to move the matter forward at all. But we don't want to get into the facts. There, if you look at the summary judgment papers, the parties have had plenty of time to do discovery and to introduce all of the arguments they want. There is no argument of financial hardship as such. There's no argument that I didn't plan. There's no argument that I would have done this. That's simply not in the record. That's attorney argument. The only thing that's in the summary judgment papers and the supplemental briefs and the supplemental discovery that was submitted is that interest is unfair because it's so large. It's $620,000. And if there was a concern about ability to pay, the fact that there's a house out there worth $1.7 belies that concern. And so we don't think it's appropriate to send this back for a trial on the issue of all the medical elements and the financial issues that Mr. Wims has allegedly incurred. We don't think that's even part of the analysis here because as a matter of law, interest cannot be prejudicial. And so he never said he couldn't pay it. He said it would be a hardship. And so we cited to Beatty, which says, you know, and particularly noting that the debtor has the burden of proof here. And he says, where the party has based his latches argument of prejudice almost entirely on a contention that is without legal support and has not, despite ample opportunity, adduced any specific evidence of harm due to the unavailability of evidence or the like, remand for further factual consideration would be futile. It would be inappropriate after discovery has been done and there's been no evidence of anything that was done to change position on finance. I don't want to get into what the discovery has shown, but there's nothing like that out there. The issue is simply, and counsel actually said it, which is it's unfair because of the passage of time and the accrual of interest. And we submit that as a matter of law, it's not, and that therefore the case should be remanded with instructions to enter summary judgment in favor of the appellants.
Thank you.
Any questions?
No.
Well, thank you both for your excellent arguments. This is really interesting. I know that's never comfort to the lawyers to hear the foundlings. It's really interesting, but it is.
As an attorney, I did enjoy the briefing, but there's a lot at stake for the
parties. Very, very good job. And it's under submission, and we'll get your written decision as soon as we can.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.